The primary election is over.
If you're looking at the city of Pensacola mayor race, D.C. Reeves has 51% of the vote. Alicia Trawick has 21% of the vote.
News Radio 92.3 full team coverage with Chris and Austin provided up-to-the-minute local and state election results.
I'm so happy to welcome David Williams into the show. Hey, David, how you doing tonight?
Oh, I'm doing fine.
I'm looking at your numbers. You have 59.12% of the vote.
News Radio 92.3. Good morning, Pensacola. Andrew McKay and the Pensacola Morning News starts right now.
From east of the weigh station to 9 Mile Road interchange. We're looking at widening it to 46 lanes at this location. We're approximately 60% design.
I know it's hard to understand, but what you have here is Brian Palmer from FDOT talking to the TPO. That's the Florida Alabama Transportation Planning Organization. That's your multi-county entity that handles regional planning questions and helps create a priority list so that the spending from FDOT or LDOT, and depending on the case, is kind of guided on either side of the water or the border by the folks in Baldwin County, Escambia County, and Santa Rosa County. And basically what Brian is saying there is that FDOT, you know the widening project on I-10, right? Okay, you know that US 29 and I-10 is being redesigned. That's going to take another 4 years, I think, before that's all done. But, you know, the widening that's going on right now through that area so that it's six lanes ends at, currently it's going to end, like the current phase of the project goes to the 9 Mile exit. Now they're talking about the next phase of it, which will go all the way to the weigh station. And the goal ultimately is to go all the way to the border. But this began years ago when you had the widening between, 29 and Scenic. And, of course, the widening on the east side of the river, that's been going on for quite some time. That's all been done for a while. But in the long run, what you're going to have is all the way from the border, all the way through to about, halfway through, not quite halfway through Santa Rosa County, is going to be six lanes at least. And the I-10 portion through US 29 interchange is going to be straight instead of bending around. And you're going to have a change in the on-ramps. You're going to go on the outside like they should instead of on the inside like they do right now. Those kind of, you know, on-ramps of despair. Anyway, so that's going to be happening. And they're working on, they're at 60% design right now. And there's going to be a meeting coming up at the Northstone Baptist Church on August 29th. If you're interested in that, that's going to be both an in-person meeting and also a virtual meeting. There's another project as well, a little bit north of where we would normally talk a lot about, but because it is an FDOT project, I thought we'd mention it.
The second project is on US 29 at Baranoak Park Road. It will be an intersection improvement at that location. We've had a number of accidents there, so we're currently designing a project, and we're considering both a traffic signal to be installed there, as well as some other options related to U-turn improvements at that area.
Okay, so in the north end, Barano Park Road, which is well north even of Cantonment, it's Cantonment, I suppose, technically north of there. Anyway, they're looking at making that a traffic light. It's a dangerous area. There's been a lot of crashes and also U-turn improvements. I don't know exactly what those are. He didn't detail it. But again, that's going to have a meeting if you live to the north. And probably you're listening to us on 95.3, which is our FM translator that's a little bit positioned to get folks in the north end of the county. Anyway, that's going to be in Cantonment on September 5th at the Victory Assembly Church. So just a couple of local roads projects that are coming up on the agenda. Also, I thought it was a very interesting. I don't know if you saw the opinion piece in the paper, but somebody wrote an opinion piece saying, whoa, slow down on the data center bans. Because why are we banning something without considering both sides, which is always a fair question to raise. David Johnson, who's a guest columnist editorialist for the PNJ, says, Escambia County has decided not to have large data centers, concerns raised about electricity and water and noise and all of the rest. But he says, before we close the door on billions of dollars in potential private investment, shouldn't we calculate what we're closing the door on? Right. This is kind of the question that I've been raising, that others, first of all, the folks who show up opposed to data centers are, you know, very well organized, motivated, and partially informed and poorly reasoned. I sort of condescendingly refer to them as the socialists because a lot of times they are. There's others as well, but that's the main motivating group. Now, the Flock Camera folks are the socialists plus some libertarians thrown in and plus some conservatives thrown in. But generally speaking, the folks who are out upset about the data centers are the socialists. And, you know, they've been very effective, as I've said many times, at getting the city council and the county commission to pay them lip service, if nothing else, and Santa Rosa County as well. And I've been raising the question, and I'm glad this person does as well, of are we sure data centers are so bad? Since many of their arguments are bad. I mean, the opponent's arguments are poor. But also, what are the benefits of data centers? I mean, why would we want to get rid of something that might be useful to us as a county? So he writes this. He says, again, this is David Johnson in the PNJ. Consider one hypothetical, a privately financed $5 billion data center in an appropriate industrial location. And there are plenty of those in the county. Using Escambia's actual 2025 property tax rates, I modeled what such a project might produce. I did not assume all $5 billion would remain taxable. Computers and other equipment depreciate rapidly, and Florida permits substantial incentives for qualifying data centers. That's Florida, not state. They're not local. My middle case illustration treats 48% of the total investment as average taxable value. So $2.5 billion, roughly, he thinks. And he says that would produce $32 million in recurring property taxes. Oh. Wait, what? Yeah, I mean, that's one of the things we've pointed out is the question about data centers presupposes that they're bad things and gives all these arguments why they're bad. And what the opponents routinely say is they're terrible, horrible, no good, nicks, you know, and there's no benefit to it. And it's all these rich people and they hate you. Well, I mean, really, there's no other side to this story. You know, anytime somebody pretends that there's only one side to a story, you kind of want to wonder why. What are they trying to accomplish? Well, he says, well, let's look at the other side economically. $32 million in recurring property taxes. He says, not over 20 years, every year. Oh, you know, that's significant. It could be higher. It could be lower. He says professional analysis would be appropriate. But consider the scale. Escambia County's general fund is about $358 million. And the budget itself is over $800 million. But there's all kinds of things that they don't really have a lot of control over in that budget. Hypothetical $32 million annual tax stream is equivalent to about 9% of today's general fund. Remember, we're facing a property tax amendment in November, which will significantly decrease the general fund revenue if it passes. A lot the first year, a lot the second year. That's money for deputies and police equipment, fire apparatus, roads and drainage, parks, libraries, emergency services, and our school district is actively recruiting bus drivers. $32 million every year is not a number we should dismiss without examining it. Neither should we ignore what a data center would cost. And then he goes on to talk about the cost some more. He says, maybe an independent analysis would conclude that $5 billion data centers are not worth the cost. If so, say no. But Escambia shouldn't make a multi-billion dollar economic decision without first knowing the answer. Yes. Yes. See, this whole conversation has been driven by extremists who are loud and persistent and obnoxious. And they've done a really good job of making what, you know, Steve Stroberger described as the county commissioner's ears bleed. Well, that's rarely a source of great policy. So what is the other side? What are the other considerations? Well, you know, until we've had that discussion, we don't really know. Of course, you know, most people would, I mean, the perception the socialists want to create is that everybody hates data centers. And it might be true, but how would you know? They're the only ones who show up at the meetings. I don't hear a lot of other people screaming about them, either online or in person. And, you know, so to this person, sort of a, how dare you? Questioning the wisdom of the unbathed masses? You know, like, and in this case, we don't even know. Maybe it's the unbathed minority. We don't know. But it's a great column, at least I thought, because it's asking the right question, an unpopular question. You know, the people who aren't showing up at the meeting matter too. And as I've said many times, we have 330,000 people in this county, about 211,000 people in Santa Rosa County. That's over 500,000 people in both counties. And if 50 people show up at a meeting, is that statistically significant? No, not really. It's, you know, it's like when you see a protest downtown and you see that there's 50 people downtown. Is that a big deal? You know, call me when it's 5,000. 50 people? I mean, that's barely even a church choir. Like, and, you know, they're all singing from the same music. So they all know each other. Now, it feels big when they're all looking at you and cheering and yelling and they've got their say. It feels big in a room where you don't normally see more than just a dozen or two people who are interested in the particular agenda items on the council or the county commission's agenda. It feels like a lot. It feels like a wave. Well, you know, but it's not. And if they're not joined by, I don't know, a couple hundred more people of sort of regular working class folks, you know, the kind who vote in primaries, Democratic and Republican, then maybe don't care so much what they have to say, especially if what they do is repeatedly say the same things. And they're usually pretty badly said things. 519 on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. If you're thinking about buying or selling a home, Christina Leavenworth and her team at Leavenworth Realty are fantastic at this. And they sold 206 homes last year. That's 4 a week. And the reason I mention that is because it's evidence of the thing that I would say about Christina, which is that she's smart. She does her research. She's always learning, always improving. She and her team are always trying to be better at things. You know, when something doesn't work, it bothers her, like really bothers her, you know, when a home is just not moving. And, you know, she had one recently that wasn't moving as she thought that it should, which her own standard for that or expectation of that is, you know, very elevated because of the great success that she and her team have had. But it wasn't selling quite as quickly as she thought. And she's like, well, I don't know. What can we do? And she said, well, inside it's painted this kind of coastal yellow, which is nice. It looks fine. There's nothing wrong with it. She said, but, you know, color can affect how people perceive a listing. And so they repainted it a very neutral, you know, common color, like it's like an off-white, I think. And she said, and it sold immediately. And that's an example of how there's nothing really wrong with the house, except that if you've sold enough houses, you know it shouldn't be taking this long. And so you start to ask, well, what could we change? And, you know, maybe a couple hundred dollars worth of paint makes all the difference in the world for selling a home worth several hundred thousand dollars. And it turned out to be. That comes from experience. And when you get success from experience, you learn things and you do it again and again, you get better at it. That's the benefit of Christina Leavenworth and her team at Leavenworth Realty. 786-3996.
You're still glowing, flirting, grooving. You've still got it. But your immune system weakens as you age, making it harder to fight illnesses like pneumococcal pneumonia and RSV. Vaccines are a key part of any health routine and can help protect you from getting really sick. Ask your doctor or pharmacist which vaccines you need. See more at PfizerForAll.com. Sponsored by Pfizer.
When I hit my 50s, I felt like things were slowing down.
This is Sandra's Metamucil story.
I started taking Metamucil for digestion, but had no idea it would impact so much more. Not only did Metamucil help me feel more regular, but my heart health saw the benefits too.
Metamucil, one simple routine, four health benefits. Digestive health starts here. Go to Metamucil.com for more details.
Hi, I'm Tom DeFranco, and I've got gas. Not that kind of gas. The kind that makes tankless water heaters, gas grills, and fireplaces, gas heater systems possible. We are DeFranco Gas. We've been servicing gas-powered business and home needs for over 38 years. DeFranco Gas can service your gas fire pits and keep your gas generator storm ready. DeFranco Gas is your local gas service provider and a member of the Better Business Bureau. DeFranco Gas. All things gas. DeFrancoGas.com.
Hi, this is Jeff Culhane, voice of the Florida State Seminoles. This is News Radio 92.3, your home for the Noles. Informative, local, dependable.
Did that little froggy get to home, or did he get eaten by the alligator?
Probably eaten.
No, he got home.
Oh, okay.
523 on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. Oh, thank you very much for voting in the Best of the Coast contest every year. We were the runner-up Best Radio Station, 92.3, Best Radio Personality, some guy named Andrew McKay, and Best Radio Show, runner-up in all categories, to my dear friends at Cat Country and Brent Lane, who I am always thrilled. Remember the, what was it? Was it Hertz? Who was the company back in the day that their advertising slogan was, you know, we're the number two against Avis? I forget who it was. I think it was Hertz. Anyway, I'm always thrilled to be number two to Cat Country because they have, you know, that's, of course, our sister station, and, you know, we dearly love them. Also, congratulations to Jordan Glass and Sports Radio 99.1 for Best Radio Personality, follow-up, runner-up, and Best Radio Show, The Glass Half Full, which is from 9 to 10 every morning, and or it's 10 to 11. I think it's 9 to 10. 9 to 10, because he's on when I'm on. And Jamie, I was going to say Jamie Kennedy. Will Kennedy, who does UWF Argos calls, is doing his show now from 7 to 9. On Sports Radio, Pensacola 99.1. So all kinds of good things going on here. And, you know, anyway, thank you for voting. I really appreciate that. Fascinating turn of events-ish. And I say ish because I don't know if anything's really going to come of it. But, you know, the Billings murders, these horrible, terrible murders that happened about 5 years before. Yeah, that's about 5 years before I got here in 2009. And I don't want to go into the details there. Disturbing, but you all know the story if you've been here for any period of time, and if you haven't, I mean, you go look it up. It's worth it, just to know. It's a terrible thing. But now, at 33 years old with 6 years left on a 24-year prison sentence, Rakeem Florence says that he converted to Islam, and as part of his conversion, he feels the need to recant some of his former testimony, which he gave implicating Donnie Stallworth Jr., as one of the seven co-conspirators who robbed and murdered the Billings back in 2009. He says, I just want an innocent man to go free during an August 21st hearing. PNJ doing good reporting on this, Ben Johnson. Basically, Stallworth, that's the other person, Donnie Stallworth, and his attorneys had said, you know, we think that this evidence or this new recant or willingness to recant as evidence means that we should get a retrial. Now, the complication is that there was another person involved in all this who, I guess, hasn't recanted, and there's supposedly video evidence of this person, Stallworth, purchasing some of the stuff that they used at the Walmart ahead of time, and this guy, Rakeem Florence, says that he doesn't remember that, so he can't definitively say. So it's not clear yet exactly what's going to happen. The judge is, you know, heard the testimony and is now going to make a decision about whether or not to use, you know, to order a retrial in that particular case, in, you know, that one person's version of the case. But the attorney for Florence actually told him that he would be smarter to not testify, to not bring forward this evidence, this recant, basically, because it puts him at liability for perjury. He testified that the guy was part of it. The kind of the going theory on his side is that he was so scared, he was willing to do anything, and to implicate this other person, you know, went along with the sheriff's office and the prosecutors and said whatever they wanted him to say is kind of the, you know, the other side's view of things. And he now says, look, based on my, you know, conversion, my religious beliefs, I have to fix it. I did something wrong, and, you know, atonement for your wrongs is part of it. And, you know, I was absolutely a part, but, you know, I brought this other person in inappropriately, which in some sense brings more legitimacy to his claims, because why would somebody risk a 15-year charge for perjury in prison to recant testimony unless the original testimony was false, right? You know, who in their right mind would do that? Well, you know, there's more to it than only that, but it's kind of a very interesting development. Meanwhile, the sheriff, Simmons, we'll talk to him about this tomorrow. Sheriff's very frustrated in all this. That's a different case. But we'll talk to him, to, you know, because I think the issue of reopening old cases, you should always want to get justice done. And if the evidence leads in a certain direction, well, you know, you release people from jail or prison. And if it doesn't lead that way, then, you know, maybe you have to have a retrial in order to figure it out. Those are difficult and complicated and, of course, costly. But in America, we're committed to getting things right. Meanwhile, the story I was talking about is Sheriff Simmons tells PNJ again, I guess. It's a lot of PNJ news this morning, which I don't normally do a lot of that, but that's okay. They're obviously a very important news organization locally. I appreciate them a lot. Good relationship with them. Sheriff Simmons says he's very shocked and surprised by dropping of the charges against the caseworker for the child neglect case. You remember this where you had one person who was involved in this had been an employee in the jail in Santa Rosa County, and one person was a school person, and one person was a caseworker, and it seems like, you know, the guardian's parents had done very neglectful things, and the allegation, they all say they're innocent. And then you had people who should have known better, you know, people in the educational setting and people in the caseworker setting all should have known better. And, you know, nobody did what they were supposed to do is, again, the allegation, which they deny. But state attorney's office is now going to not prosecute Lauren Dabbs, who is the state the caseworker who was involved in all of this. And remember, there were several, there was an initial arrest and then there were subsequent arrests. And as we've talked about many times, people who are mandatory reports, if you see problems with a child in certain industries, for all people, you have to report that to the authorities. There's an even heightened level of punishment involved for doctors, teachers, psychiatrists, social workers, and those folks, because they are absolutely obligated to report this stuff to the law, and nobody did. Or, again, at least that's what the allegation is. So we'll see what comes of it, but I'm not surprised that Sheriff would be frustrated about this, because they only bring cases that they think are good cases, and they're always trying to protect kids, and that means prosecuting people who didn't do their job. At least that's what the evidence looks like. And, you know, obviously that's not going to turn out to be the case in at least one of the four people related to this case. 437-1620, 437-1620. President Trump is putting tariff relief on 300,000 tons of imported ground beef in an effort in trade for them being below market price. So your ground beef prices are supposed to go down. It's a weird one, though, because I thought Trump, didn't he tell us that, you know, tariffs don't affect consumer prices? I feel for sure that was a messaging component, even though all of the people in the world who know economics say tariffs would raise consumer prices. Now he's reducing tariffs in order to reduce consumer prices, which seems like a bit of a reversal.
Fox News, I'm CJ Papa. President Trump applying economic pressure to Iran's wallet. Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent expected to unveil what the Trump administration is billing as the toughest sanctions in history on the Islamic Republic. Pakistan's army chief set to visit Iran today in an effort to get the peace talks going again. Oil prices dropping this morning. Meanwhile, battling a wildfire in Reno, Nevada.
Still looking at 0% containment over 15,000 acres. So again, it was the big increase in the winds that led to that explosive growth with this fire Saturday night into Sunday morning.
That's Fox Weather's Brenda Merwin. The wind calm right now. Humidity expected to drop later today. President Trump waving the green flag to start the Freedom 250 IndyCar race Sunday in D.C. American Kyle Kirkwood winning the event. America's listening to Fox News.
Good morning. It's 5:31 right now, 78 degrees and partly cloudy. I'm Steve Taylor in for David Wayne on News Radio 92.3. State and military leaders are weighing their options for easing Highway 98 congestion by Herbert Field after some past fixes like the flyover near the base entrance have not solved the problem. Representative Nathan Boyles told Channel 3.
There are multiple tools that I think that are ultimately in the toolkit that have to be evaluated, and some of those come from, you know, extending turn lanes along the existing corridor, you know, adding additional shorter connectors, widening the existing corridor, and then, you know, I'd say probably the most drastic measures being kind of bypasses around that 98 corridor.
Congressman Jimmy Patronis filed the Warrior Road Act aimed at making security critical infrastructure projects a federal funding priority. Senator Getz says solving the congestion ultimately comes down to two things, land and money.
I think it's everyone's concern that we don't want to lose mission. We obviously don't want to lose bases.
Senator Gates says solving the congestion ultimately comes down to two things, land and the money. The main concern is keeping the base and the missions they support in Northwest Florida. In the meantime, the base has requested additional Florida troopers to be in the area helping with the traffic problem. Thousands packed stadiums across the region on Friday night for the opening night of high school football, but storms nearly stole the show. Tate and Pine Forest both saw some delays under a severe thunderstorm watch. Every athletic trainer was watching WeatherSTEM, which is a Tallahassee-based tracking system with stations in all seven Escambia County's high schools. Thiel told Channel 3 what is built into it.
It has everything that you could possibly imagine. Anyone in our county could Google WeatherSTEM or weather stations in Escambia County, Florida, and see the seven of our high schools, plus UWF has four, and then some fire stations here, and you can see all the data in there.
The system's color-coded like the beach flags. Lightning inside of 10 miles clears the field. Beyond 30, it's all clear. UWF students are digging up history, literally, ahead of the construction on the school's new football stadium. Archaeologists were required to survey the site before building could begin, since it needed room for a retention pond. They found artifacts dating back to the Woodland period, roughly 1000 to 1008 BC to 1000 AD. Facility Research Associate April Holmes says the area shows multiple periods of Native American occupation. Graduate student Dominic Sculte says holding those artifacts is a chance to connect with the people who left them behind. UWF archaeologists have studied sites on the campus there since the late 1980s. Let's check our forecast from Channel 3.
This is meteorologist Brooke Richardson with your first morning weather update. We are going to be seeing some showers and thunderstorms today. 50% chance of those showers and thunderstorms. Otherwise, going to be seeing partly cloudy skies, high near 93 degrees. Overnight tonight, temperatures dropping near 77. For Tuesday, 50% chance of rain with a high near 91 degrees. Tuesday night, temperatures dropping near 76. Heading into Wednesday, 50% chance of rain with a high near 91 degrees. Stay connected, Channel 3 News First Morning Weather Team. Download the WEAR-TV weather app. This is Brooke Richardson from the First Morning Weather Center.
Right now, 78 degrees in Pensacola, 80 in Gulf Breeze, and 80 also in Milton at 5:35. The next news is at 6, breaking news anytime. I'm Steve Taylor for News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable.
What's fun and happening in Pensacola? You'll find out as the City of Pensacola Parks and Recreation Department talks about it here on the Pensacola Expert Panel. Join us tomorrow at 10 a.m. to find out what's going on in your resource centers, parks, recreation programs, and at the Community Maritime Park. It's a great month to get out and play Pensacola. Tune in tomorrow at 10.
The Pensacola Expert Panel on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620.
The I-10 Wired TechNet CyberCoast Summit returns October 28th to Pensacola Beach. This is the Southeast's premier cybersecurity and technology conference. Get connected with top experts and explore the cutting-edge trends shaping our future. From AI to robotics to national security and healthcare tech. Discounts available for students, military, and government employees. Don't miss out. Secure your tickets today at itenwired.com.
The primary election is over.
Gay Valmont is joining us now. Hey, Gay, how are you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I know you're going to be representing the Democratic side for Congress District 1.
News Radio 92.3, full team coverage with Chris and Austin, provided up-to-the-minute election results.
Joining me now, Jimmy Patronus. Hey, Jimmy, how you doing?
I couldn't be any better right now.
I'm looking at your numbers. You have 59.12% of the vote.
News Radio 92.3.
You continue to push for change in the Democratic Party, but you're also one of the most prominent figures in that party right now. Your endorsement is incredibly valuable. I've noticed that this time around, this election cycle, you have not endorsed candidates that were challenging Democratic incumbents in the House. Mm-hmm. And somebody took note of this. A fellow progressive wrote recently. The headline in The Hill was, "Today's cautious AOC would not have endorsed the AOC of 2018. Because you were obviously running against an incumbent. That's probably correct, right? What's your thinking there?
You know, I wasn't endorsed by anybody I was running.
Your friends.
Yeah, just some friends. So yeah. I wasn't endorsed by I don't think I was endorsed by a single elected official when I was running for office.
It's an interesting question that Jonathan Carl posed to Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and saying, you know, hey, look, people have noticed that you didn't endorse people who are in the challenger side. And why aren't you endorsing people? It's like you have moved to the mainstream and now you're part of the establishment and you aren't endorsing the people who were you back then. I mean, that's basically her answer. But then, you know, she's going to give an answer, which is not an answer, not surprisingly, but it is kind of a fascinating slice into her mind. And, you know, part of the reason that she's being talked about a little bit more is because she's one of the leading contenders for the Democratic nomination for 2028. You say, how could that be? Well, I mean, have you not talked to your fellow Americans in a while? Have you not been on social media? Socialism's, you know, hot these days. You know, people are running around with Che Guevara shirts again, right? That's like, they're having a good time, the socialists are.
You know, I think when I see so many of these incredible insurgent candidates that are running today, that's part of what makes me so proud of them, is that they do not answer to any master. They are not beholden to any corporate interest or any party boss. And they are completely independent, which allows them to be responsive to their communities and the people that elected them. And I think that in many ways, that makes our movement stronger when you have to rely on your own organizing skills.
So now she's a conservative. People should help themselves. People should take care of themselves. And when you give them the benefits of assistance, you keep them weak and you don't let them strive to their full potential. I mean, it sounds weirdly like conservatism, that you should not be always reaching over to help people because, you know, maybe they learn how to do something on their own. You know, don't give a man a fish, teach him, or don't give them a fish. I mean, I don't know what the modern variation on this is, but, you know, teach them how to fish and then they will fish for themselves. It's also, of course, very convenient for her that being called out for not endorsing the kind of candidates who would have been her in the day, it turns out to be a benefit to them. I'm doing them a favor by staying out of their races because I'm helping them learn how to ride without training wheels. And that makes our movement strong. It's such a wonderful evasion of why aren't you? But he's going to press her a little bit, which I appreciate that.
But like in New York, you had the candidates that were endorsed by Mayor Mamdani, two of whom were challenging sitting members of Congress, powerful members of Congress, Democrats. And you decided to sit that one out. Mm-hmm. Is that part of wanting to work with your colleagues that are in the House? I mean, what's
By the way, it's a wonderful question because it's a little bit of a, but are you a coward kind of question? You know, like you're not willing to endorse against the people that you have to show up to work with every day. I mean, here's Mamdani endorsing. Is he harming them by endorsing them? Because your argument a moment ago was you're making them strong by not endorsing them. You're protecting them. You're actually helping them best by letting them struggle and survive or fail on their own. Meanwhile, Mamdani is helping them in a way that adversely affects them and makes them beholden to him. All the things she just said would be critiques of him from her point of view, unless she's just saying whatever she needs to say to get through the interview and not answer the really hard questions. It should be my own take on all of this. But, okay, so is it cowardice on your part that you're not willing to endorse against the people that you work with?
Wanting to work with your colleagues that are in the House? I mean, what's the...
Yeah, you know, I think we're all in different... You know, politics is also a workplace,
yeah.
And we're all in different positions to that. I endorsed, for example, in New York, on the state level, I endorsed a slate of challengers to incumbents
in
the assembly,
yeah,
and in the Senate. And I don't work in state government, which gives me a greater freedom to be able to do that and to assess it. And
And now it's full blown hypocrisy, right? Oh, I did endorse at the state level. Again, doesn't the same argument apply to state legislators, that they should rise or fall on their own merits and that, you know, they should be respected and cherished because they're not beholden to anybody? Meanwhile, you are endorsing at this. I mean, like, it's, which is it, lady? Because, you know, there's no consistency here other than the consistency of, well, she's willing to endorse against people who she doesn't have to show up to see their opponents if they lose because they work at the state level and it doesn't cost her as much politically. Whereas at the federal level, if she endorses and then those people do not win, then, you know, she has to be on committees with the people that she endorsed against. So it's not about who's benefited or beholden or a master and servant relationship. It's ultimately that she doesn't want to endorse people that are going to be challenged by, that are challenging the people that she has to work with, which, by the way, you know, if she had just said that, I actually would have, I always respect honesty. Even if the answer is a little bit cowardly, I respect honesty. You know, honesty would have said, you know, I just don't know that it's the best for my district if I endorse people who might lose against candidates that I have to work with. My job is to benefit the people of my district, and that means getting things done. That means having allies in Congress. And sure, if they win, I get a little bit better ally. But if they lose, how does it benefit me? If I stay out of the race, then I can be friends with anybody who wins. And I can maybe get my agenda done better, which is to benefit the people in my district. Now, that's a very adult kind of thing to say, which she sort of has become more of an adult in this regard and isn't the just ideological say whatever I think I believe in. But, you know, she's not willing to say that because it makes her look bad. I don't think it makes her look necessarily that bad. It just makes her look like she's not a crazy radical anymore or as much, which may be true, but may also be part of the persona she's putting on to try to run for the presidency in 2028.
My understanding is...
Oh, she was asked about Francesca Hong, this Minnesota governor candidate who was a DSA, you know, a socialist. And why didn't she, you know, who had had some, you know, change of heart recently about certain issues, which whether you think that's genuine or whether that's just, you know, got caught in the Twitter cookie jar and had to explain why she said some terrible things in the past.
Understanding is that is that Francesca Hong has made clear her present stances to her electorate.
Yeah, she's moved away from a lot
of that. She's moved away from it. And I have a local city councilman that has this saying, woke one was crazy.
Woke one was crazy. Okay, that's
true. And I think that what's important is that we have to assess what
was it? I mean, did the movement go too far with some of those positions? I mean, you briefly supported the idea of defunding the police.
Well, you know, I think that during this time and especially during COVID, there was a huge opening of the Overton window. We were shut down. There was some of the highest unemployment rates that we have seen because of those shutdowns.
Yeah.
And I think that the doors were really open in trying to entertain any and every policy that was going to get us to a better place.
There's so much in that that's worth talking about. By the way, thank you, PJ. Wisconsin for Francesca Hong, not Minnesota. First of all, the whole concept of woke 1.0, and that we're now working on the second version, which is, by the way, not the second version. It's like the fifth version. You know, remember political correctness back in the day? That was just wokeism, early wokeism. And there's been other movements to suppress thought and promote liberalism and normalize weirdness throughout history. It's relatively new, but in the last 50 years, this is certainly not the first time that it's been tried. But so the woke 1.0 stuff is interesting because what you want to ask is a very specific question. Okay, which things did you go too far on, right? Which specific policies do you think were wrong that need to be revised? And then the natural question is, woke 2.0 or 3.0 or whatever we're working on now, is it genuinely different or is it only different in messaging? Is it actually advocating for different policies? If so, which ones? Or is it just advocating for the same policies with a little bit nicer rhetoric? Those are completely fair questions. Of course, he's not going to ask them. The other issue is the Overton window. Just so you don't go through this without knowing the concept, Overton window is the idea that in politics, if there's a range, like on a scale from 0 to 10, 0 being, let's say, the most conservative and 10 being the most liberal, though that's a terrible way to measure, but let's just go with it for now. The Overton window is the idea that society sits at somewhere in the middle. And let's say society is at a 5, whatever this particular policy is we're talking about. It doesn't much matter. The idea of the window is that it varies depending on the issue. If you're at a 5, you're well within the mainstream. If you're at a 4 or a 6, you're still within the mainstream. If you're at a 3, ooh, pretty extreme. You know, if you're at a 7, pretty extreme. Even though the actual agenda of some people might be to get to 10 or to get to 0, they have to kind of pretend to be a 7 because at least that's sort of close enough. And then when you push, if you win and you get the new norm changed from 5 to 7, well, now all of a sudden, you know, 8's in the mainstream and 7's in the mainstream. And what used to be a 4 was in the mainstream is no longer in the mainstream at all because the window is, you know, let's say 2 positions wide. Opening and closing the Overton window is the idea that, you know, what's allowable in society in a time of open discussion and lots of discord might be 3 or 4 spaces on either side. So that what is within the realm of normal conversation might not only be from 4 to 6, but might be from like 2 to 8. And so over time, this can shift. And the new norm is, you know, like hairstyles or fashion or anything else. There's a norm. There's variation within the norm. There's things that are at the edge of the norm. And then there's things that are outside the norm. And typically those are suppressed, either actually suppressed by the person being unwilling to, you know, disrupt, or actively suppressed, you know, through laws or through boycotts or something else. Anyway, she's saying that during COVID, because everybody was cooped up and thinking about everything all over again, there was lots of openings in the Overton window. There was lots of opportunity to push an agenda one way or the other. Now the Overton window is closed a little bit. People are less excited about that. So you have to talk a little bit nicely. You kind of have to couch your words in rhetoric that fits within the mainstream views or is close enough to it, even though you still believe in the extremist views.
I actually think that the discussions that were had in that time were quite fruitful. I think that when we talk about crime today, it's fundamentally different than the way that we talked about crime in bringing crime down, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that we all share in the goals of having as low a crime rate as possible. I think that, you know, during lockdown, of course, rhetoric in that time is not rhetoric that we would use today. And I'm grateful that these candidates have the opportunity to present who they are to their electorate and what they're campaigning on in this moment.
We need better lipstick on this pig. It's a little bit of a mixed metaphor since we're talking about defunding the police, right? But, you know, the idea is we need to change the language. Don't change the substance. Just talk differently about it, which is a very adult, savvy way of approaching the subject. It's not what AOC original would have said, but it's also scary because she's recognizing that if you want to get a radical agenda passed, you have to look like you're not a radical. You have to let other people basically take the bullet for you, look like the radicals, draw the window over towards your side, and then you can come in and, you know, well, they asked for an 8, but you're like, well, but I think a 7 is good enough, when a 7 is still a radical change from a 5. And that's what she's saying is, you know, the rhetoric has shifted, which is no change in the underlying policy at all.
As you know, and obviously the Democratic Socialists of America are having quite a moment. Mm-hmm. But you know how Republicans are responding. Let me just give you a brief sampling.
Sure. Let's call it what it is. It's communism.
The commie caucus is coming to Congress.
Communism is on the ballot this November.
We're not going to turn this country into a communist experiment.
Well, you can kind of get a sense of the theme. And obviously, the president has said the same thing.
But I love the disdain. The almost apologetic that I had to subject you to this conservative viewpoint where they're reminding you of the views that you and your people have said before and hold in the past. And now you're actually admitting out loud, still hold, but just want to change the rhetoric because you want to be more palatable to people who aren't willing to embrace the extremism that you used to advocate for. But I'm sorry, we had to play those clips for you and you had to have your sensitive ears damaged by these conservative voices.
But by the way, just a quick definitional thing. What in your mind is the difference between socialism and communism?
I think to me, the fundamental differences, there's many.
Yeah.
One prevailing one is democracy. And I believe that democratic socialists are fundamentally pro-democracy. And we believe in the ballot box. We believe in respecting the outcomes of elections and governing democratically and ensuring that the ideas that and policies that are implemented are won through popular vote and popular opinion.
Most of your socialist revolutions have been won through popular vote. And, I mean, look, you know, Fidel Castro used to win a lot of elections, and Vladimir Putin wins a lot of elections, you know. Kim Jong-un wins a lot of elections. There's always popular vote behind the totalitarian government that is ushered in under the promise of doing good for all people all the time. And by the way, even if you don't go down that way of responding to her, the Constitution is built to restrain pure democracy. It's built to be slow, frustrating, to respect rights by making it hard for government to do things. With the DSA, if you look at their platform, what they want is quick, radical, massive, like wholesale change, including a total upheaval of the Constitution. They want to get rid of the presidency, the Supreme Court, the Senate. They want to have just the House of Representatives. And if you look at what that would mean, it would be no more Bill of Rights. It would be essentially a democracy with no constraints, which is terrifying to imagine. And notice what she did. She said, well, the big difference between us and communism is, you know, we believe in democracy. Well, yeah, communism always starts as democratic revolution, you know, the people's revolution, the proletariat uprising. But also, how do you avoid ever getting into that totalitarian state? Well, part of the way is for 250 years, we've had this thing called the Constitution with checks and balances and frustrations, and it doesn't get a lot of things done very fast, but you have to keep explaining that to people because if you let the problems grow and you don't tell people why the problems exist because of freedom and limited government, then they'll say, well, we should do something about that and make government faster so it can solve these problems.
Another person who's been made an issue is Hassan Piker, who mm-hmm. obviously endorsed Abdul Sayed in Michigan. You've been on his live stream, you know, mm-hmm. at least a few times. He's somebody who said, that America deserved 9/11. Now he backed off from that.
Yes, he's apologized.
But he said a lot of controversial things. Is he somebody that should have a role in the progressive movement going forward?
You know, I think,
by the way, out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks. You know, people can apologize for saying a thing that they wish they hadn't said. That's very different from apologizing because they didn't really mean it when they said it.
No, I think when we look at our elections that have happened, we have lost young people. Much hay was made about the fact that we lost young men in the last election. And many of the same consultants that are wringing their hands today were the same ones talking about how we need to go on Joe Rogan and we need to be not so, you know, willing to engage in cancel culture. And I think that the flip-flopping on this is a tactical debate that they may be having.
Again, completely acknowledging that there's been no change in substance. It's purely about tactics. Say whatever needs to be said to get your actual agenda accomplished. Don't, you know, if it sounds like you're flip-flopping, well, to say we've matured, we've evolved, when in fact what you've evolved is only the words and not the underlying substance. So I thought it was a fascinating interview. Again, she is widely considered to be one of the front runners potentially for a presidential nomination, maybe for a vice presidential role in 2028. So let's not ignore her only because you think she's nuts. Pay attention and pay attention to what she's actually saying, because it's pretty frightening when you take it seriously. 5:55 on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. I'm Andrew McKay.
Did you know? Economic development is not about slogans. It is about outcomes. Florida West Economic Development Alliance works to recruit and support businesses that generate high-wage jobs, significant capital investment, and long-term tax base growth. That means stronger public services and a more competitive Escambia County without raising taxes. Learn more at FloridaWestEDA.com.
Join Jonathan Cook from Jonathan's Flooring and Construction Wednesday at 9 a.m. on the Pensacola Expert Panel. Jonathan will be sharing his years of expertise on flooring, including insight on materials, installation, and maintenance, plus lots of great advice on home and office remodeling, including the kitchen, bath, cabinets, and more.
The Pensacola Expert Panel on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Text or call with your questions. 850-437-1620.
One time he forgot to fuel up the boat. And it wouldn't be the first time he left his tackle box behind. On one trip he even headed out without his lucky hat. And seems he almost always forgets to wear his sunscreen. But he never forgets to wear the one thing that could save his life. Life jackets save lives. Wear it, Florida.
Visit myfwc.com for more information.
Barkley Van Camp and Robbins. MVR. Weekdays at 11 on News Radio 92.3, 95.3, and AM 1620.
Informative, local, dependable.
Where the hell have you been, soldier?
Training, sir!
Training, sir!
What kind of training, son?
Army training, sir!
Army training, sir!
Razzle Dazzle, 5:57 here on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. I'm Andrew McKay. It's Pensacola Morning News. If you have any kind of a home improvement project that you need to work on, get supplies, get advice, seriously, get advice, go to Pensacola Hardware. They can help you with that. Now, that's true if you're at the, like, the Andrew McKay end of the spectrum, where it's like, you know, touch a hammer and dread, although if I have to, I have to. Or if you're at the other end of the spectrum where you build things for a living or you love working on home improvement projects, go there. They're your people. They speak your language. You won't have to have a translator. You know, a lot of times if you're a builder, you might go to some other hardware store and think, man, these people don't even know what I'm talking about. And go to Pensacola Hardware, they will know, because they have been doing this for 175 years. The institutional knowledge is tremendous. It's family run. Jimmy and Martin and Mansfield and Susan, you know, they'll take care of you. And they really want you to get the end result you want, to get it wisely, cost effectively, and safely. And that means sometimes, like if you're buying something, they might actually kind of pause and say, hey, have you ever done this before? Well, no. Okay, well, here's some things you want to know to make sure that you get it done safely, because that's the kind of people they are. I mean, there's a reason that they have been helping people build, rebuild, and remodel Pensacola since 1851. Like, before there was Levi's, there was Pensacola Hardware, the oldest business in the entire state of Florida, and a really cool place to go visit, just as a place to visit, right downtown at 20 East Gregory Street. Yeah, apparently, if you are in Venice, I did not know this, but apparently in Venice, men can't go shirtless. It's just a law. And so a couple was recently jogging, you know, the morning jog being very American. And he had taken his shirt off to run and people were looking at him. Stop. No, don't. hide the nipple. You know, so apparently it's actually a law. And, you know, some of the online response to her post were, you should know better, you stupid Americans. Where exactly would you go to find such information? You know, it's not like part of the cultural zeitgeist. I'd never heard this rule before.
Isn't this the city of art?
Yeah, right. And, you know, and it's a man jogging topless past art that shows men topless. You say, well, women topless too. Okay, fair enough. But typically they have, you know, little cherubs spouting water at them and dolphins around them, so it's a little different.
Local talk in the morning, 5 to 9 with Andrew McKay is on News Radio 92.3.